This is St. Louis on the Air from St. Louis Public Radio. I'm Elaine Cha. Thanks to artificial intelligence, voice cloning is everywhere these days, and it's really good. The origins of such technology are positive. It was meant to improve quality of life for people who've lost their voices, for example. But so much of that voice cloning now is so good, it's bad. Because AI-generated speech, or deepfake audio, has a nefarious side that has experts and lay people worried. Scams are certainly one reason for such anxiety. For example, some people know I love Flamin' Hot Cheetos, and there's a rumor going around about a local company that's experimenting with an ingredient that would make its competing chips even flamier. They'd make actual flames come out of snackers' mouths and other body parts. Whether we're talking about snack secrets or much more serious schemes around money and politics, how do we know what is real and what's fake? Researchers are racing to come up with detection software tools to discriminate between audio produced by artificial intelligence and what's truly come out of the squawk box attached to hosts' bodies. Okay, so let's pause here. Did you catch that earlier? That part about Flamin' Hot Cheetos? That was not me speaking. It was a computer-made version of my voice. If you couldn't tell, you're not alone. Even people and good friends on the St. Louis on the Air team were nearly fooled because deepfakes have gotten so good that even AI experts have a hard time telling them apart. Joining us to talk about voice cloning, why it can be worrisome, and potential solutions, we have Ning Zhang, Assistant Professor of Computer Science and Engineering at Washington University. Ning, welcome to St. Louis on the Air.
Thank you for having me.
Let's start with the basics of artificial intelligence, or AI. Briefly, what exactly is AI, or machine learning, and how does it work?
AI is a set of computer algorithms that learns patterns from data. And once they learn the pattern from data, they try to mimic the task that is done by everyday human.
Mm-hmm. And then deep fakes. What are they, and when is it that they started being used?
Deepfake describes artificial images and audio or video that is generated by artificial intelligence. It has gained popularity recently due to the recent events in generative AI capabilities. Some of the good application of generative AI we can already see are ChatGPT, right? You can ask it to write article. You can ask it to generate summary. You can give voice back to folks who have paralyzed capabilities because due to heart attacks. I think those are some of the positive side of generative AI. Recently, we are also witnessing a set of nefarious use of AI. For example, recently, a deepfake of Biden's voice was left in New Hampshire's voters' voicemail box saying the election does not matter.
Mm-hmm. Now, these positive and negatives, we are seeing them right now. I mean, when deepfakes started being used, how well were people able to identify that what they were hearing and seeing was not, in fact, authentic?
So when AI was, there has been a period of development. Before, it wasn't very good, and people are still able to tell it apart. But nowadays, it's very difficult for folks to tell real from fake.
Mm-hmm. And insofar as the positive ways that it is being used, there are some innovations that have helped people to, to go about their lives much more easily. One of the things that I have seen literally on my screen is some suggestions that will come up for words, or if I have misspelled something. So what are some other ways that people see AI that is applied for, you know, less dangerous or, you know, insidious purposes?
So I see AI as one of the disrupting technologies that would change many, many things. For example, I was able to put my cell phone to my daughter the other day, and she was able to talk to AI for almost an hour, asking AI to tell her stories, asking AI to draw photos for her, and she loved it. There are also other AI applications that I feel is groundbreaking. For example, predicting the clinical outcome of the surgeries. So part of what we're doing at Washington University is applying AI to medicine and healthcare. And I feel like there's great potential in leveraging these capabilities to improve life.
Something else that people listening in our region, they may have some connections to agriculture, right? How is AI being utilized there?
So AI can be used to recognize wheat, right? And then you can use IoT to automatically rid of them. And that is much more effective than trying to use other means, such as insecticide, right?
And climate, too. How is it being used in so far as meteorology, tracking climate change?
So I have also seen AI being used to predict weather patterns. You can use it to track energy usage and even ask AI to teach you how to save energy in your house.
Mm-hmm.
So those predictive analytics can fundamentally change how we look at our life
mm-hmm.
and how to save energy from everyday activities.
Right. Now, to these negative purposes for which AI is being used, what is it beyond individual level scams that we need to be mindful of, particularly at institutional levels?
So one of the most effective cybersecurity attacks against institutions is called spear phishing. And in spear phishing activities, they would write emails as if it's targeted towards you. So if this were done by human, they would need to learn your life patterns, they would need to learn your contacts, and then write an email mimicking as if it's your friend writing this email and ask you to click on something of your interest.
Mm-hmm.
But with AI, all this can be done automatically. And it because AI doesn't rest, so the scale is massive. All of a sudden, originally with one attacker, it was targeting maybe 10 people per day. Now you might get hundreds and thousands of scams that looks exactly like your colleague's tone or writing style hitting your mailbox.
Mm-hmm. We are in an election year, and you had mentioned the deep fake of Joe Biden's voice. How is it that AI may play a role in politics and campaigning moving forward?
This is actually one of the things that motivate our lab in studying this particular area. All of us are influenced by our environment. And if the environment is no longer real because of the fake, then we will unconsciously be influenced by artificial contents. These artificial contents, if they are created correctly, that's targeted towards you, they're much more effective in spreading agenda.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm concerned that this spreading of agenda using automated capability would lead some of our opinions and choices to the wrong place.
Are there any examples of that have happened outside the United States?
I believe deepfake was used in Taiwan's election.
Oh, just recently?
Yes, mm-hmm. but I think it was used massively in the last election.
Mm-hmm. Now, you mentioned AI reading stories to your daughter. I mean, mm-hmm. do you have any concerns about how natural that may seem to someone who is so young, and as she's growing older, is exposed to an environment in which there are so many of these deepfakes out there?
It's interesting you ask that question. I think sometimes there is concern, because when you train an AI model, you present it a set of data. That set of data often captures a preset of ideology, right? And outcomes, a model that meets a certain set of social technical expectation, right? So when my daughter talks to AI and try to learn from AI through the interaction, she's learning that set of preset personality or will, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is that good or bad? I mean, do I necessarily agree with everyone who's talking about, for example, deepfake or cooking or traveling and how you organize your financial assets? Those may not come out the same.
Mm-hmm.
So while there's a concern, but I think humans are resilient. So being exposed to different ideologies is probably not a bad thing.
Okay. We're speaking with Ning Zhang, who is Assistant Professor of Computer Science and Engineering at Washington University, and we're discussing deepfakes and cloning via artificial intelligence. Now, we also are talking here on the radio, and as far as the future of broadcasting, is there any reason that I should be worried that AI will change my job or perhaps replace me?
Oh, that's a $1 million question. That's a really good one. I think AI would change our workflow because it makes us more efficient. And there's no changing of that. I feel like it will happen.
Mm-hmm.
For us, it's more important to think about how we can ride the wave of AI, how we can leverage AI to improve our productivity and improve our life quality. So I would think about myself as, getting a partner who can work 24/7 mm-hmm. and would not complain to me.
Okay. So, AI is still, relatively new, but it has spread across all sectors of society. What is it that people should know about how to recognize AI in their everyday lives and then to protect themselves from its potential harms?
Oh, that's a great question. It remains an open research question, so we don't know, I have to say. There are efforts that try to embed signals into AI-produced content, which they call watermark,
mm-hmm.
And then we will be able to tell whether this is AI-generated content by having maybe a small disclaimer saying this content is generated by AI. But many of the content that are generated by AI may not have that disclaimer. I think fundamentally it would be very difficult to tell AI-generated content for non-AI-generated content.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe looking at it from the perspective of whether this is something that you agree with is better. Currently, AI-generated content, there you can tell slightly the difference. So if you are working with current set of AI capabilities, not thinking about future, just current ones,
right?
AI-generated content oftentimes doesn't have a very central theme of point it tried to make, right? So if you look at it, everything is very well written. If you asked it to write a paragraph, everything's well written. But on the other hand, it fails to deliver a key message coherently.
Yes. And I have a spouse who's in academia, and he has seen that in papers that students have turned in. So AI is not perfect, right? There are biases to consider. Are there ways in which that is being taken into consideration when we're thinking about what is produced and then how to tell what is or isn't real?
So yes, AI is inherently biased because there's bias in the data. So it would learn from a biased data and generate a biased decision. I have maybe a little bit different point of view than the most of other people. I feel like bias sometimes helps us. So it's important to recognize what are the bias that we don't want to have, such as racial bias,
mm-hmm.
right? And what are the bias that we want to have, such as years of experience of looking at a particular disease,
mm-hmm.
right? So there's a fine line between what are unwanted and wanted bias. I think we're still trying to explore that, and there are effort in research trying to balance that by saying, hey, AI, if you, you know, I know you're learning from this unbalanced data set, but if you try to optimize too much on this race, then I'm going to penalize you.
Mm-hmm.
Therefore, AI would say, oh, I recognize that if I'm, you know, optimize too much for performance, I'm going to be penalized. Therefore, I'm going to be trying to be more fair.
Mm-hmm. We're going to take a very quick break, but we'll be back shortly to continue this conversation. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio. Welcome back. I am, in fact, Elaine Cha. Let's return to our conversation with Ning Zhang, who's Assistant Professor of Computer Science and Engineering at Washington University. He's also a researcher working on deepfakes, which is synthesized speech that's produced by artificial intelligence. Ning, let's talk now about the research that you do. Last month, the Federal Trade Commission announced winners of its voice cloning challenge to monitor and prevent malicious voice cloning. And you were one of the three winners for your project called Deepfake. So congratulations.
Thank you.
How is it that the idea for Deepfake came about?
So it was motivated by some of the observation that people are using Deepfake to scam seniors and taking their entire life saving.
Mm-hmm.
We want to do something about it. And then we start exploring and say, what can be done? And there are two school of thoughts in terms of deepfake. You either detect it, so postmortem, people already generated deepfake, you try to detect whether this is deepfake or not.
Mm-hmm.
And we find that incredibly difficult. And then we went back to this the whiteboard and say, can we prevent it to start with? And then we came across a piece of work from Professor Ben Zhao from University of Chicago that leveraged adversarial machine learning to sabotage the attacker in the image domain.
Mm-hmm.
And then we asked ourselves, oh, that's a super clever idea. Can we apply the same concept to voice? To make sure that even if the attacker is able to get a hold of our voice, if we added additional adversarial noise in it, it can hinder the synthesis of our audio.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how the idea came about.
So essentially, it's like a good kind of booby trap.
Yes.
Okay. Now, let's hear an example of this. Here's an audio clip of me that has been fed into your deepfake, anti-fake program.
So we heard your colleague, Nicole Priest, talking earlier about cicada hunting and doing so at night.
And again, Ning, explain to us what we just heard.
So what you just heard is a clip of Elaine plus our protection. What our protection does is that it adds small bits of noise across the voice spectrum such that when the attacker picks up this clip and try to learn Elaine's style of speaking through something called the embedding, it would learn the wrong embedding.
Mm-hmm. So when you say the spectrum, what do you mean by that?
When I say the spectrum, I mean the voice spectrum in terms of frequency.
Mm.
So we added noise in different frequency range so that the voice can be, the noise level can be kept to a level where it minimize the impact to human hearing.
Mm-hmm. So let's hear again the deep fake audio that was played during the intro to this segment. For example, some people know I love Flamin' Hot Cheetos, and there's a rumor going around about a local company that's experimenting with an ingredient that would make its competing chips even flamier. They'd make actual flames come out of snackers' mouths and other body parts. So for those knowing now that that is fake, that was produced based on audio that was not defaked. Now, the clip that we had heard before that had that noise added in. And so what ends up coming out of that is something that sounds like this instead.
For example, some people know I love Flamin' Hot Cheetos.
So that doesn't sound like me at all. What happened there?
What happened was that for AI to synthesize one's voice, it needs to have a general human speaking model, which is stays all the same because it's, you know, general human modeling. And then it needs several seconds of your voice to learn how you speak. So it stores this pattern of how you speak into something called the embedding. What we did was we add adversarial noise, which attacks this embedding extraction process. So it extracts to a different person's embedding because of the adversarial noise that we added.
Mm-hmm.
So now it's using a different embedding, which is a different person's voice, to synthesize the audio, therefore it doesn't sound like you.
Mm-hmm. Now all the audio, to make sure that we give credit where it's due, was prepared by a student of yours, right?
Yes, it's prepared by Ziyuan Yu, who's mm-hmm. the first author of the paper that mm-hmm. that we originally published on the deepfake system.
Right. How did it feel to hear for the first time the difference between something that was defaked and something that was not?
I was amazed. I was telling my student, this is really, really good. And I am very happy that you're able to get this done, because that would mean we will be able to save many people.
Mm-hmm. And then how is it then, Ning, that your program, it can be used for practical purposes, you know, sort of on a more everyday level, not just sort of a research project and some examples?
So we're working towards that. We are trying to make sure that the research prototype can be used by people day to day. Some of the scenarios that we can think of are, for example, if the attacker use a spam call to try to collect your voice, maybe if you get a unknown number from St. Louis, you would still pick it up and say, "Hello, who's there?" Then this is enough for spammers to copy your voice.
Mm-hmm.
So we can embed this protection tool in the phone so that when you talk to unknown numbers, it would add this perturbation or adversarial noise so that, you know, spammers cannot copy your voice. There's also applications in protecting the copyright or the intellectual properties of voice actors and narrators.
Mm-hmm.
And we are working with some of the folks in that area to see how we can help in protecting their livelihood, in a sense.
Right, right. So from what I understand, it doesn't take that much audio in order to produce a deepfake. What are we talking about insofar as seconds go?
2 to 3 seconds.
Wow. So the voicemail greeting that I have now, maybe I should consider changing it?
That's one potential way to mm-hmm. do it. Or you can use deepfake.
Okay, right. So AI, as we mentioned, you know, it is still relatively new. What is it that still needs to be researched and understood about artificial intelligence?
That's a great question. The list would be too many for me to enumerate, but I'll highlight some of the most important ones that I consider. I think several things. The first thing I would like to make sure is that AI will not harm the physical world or the human.
Mm.
That's one thing that I think all AI researchers, including myself, need to work towards, is ensuring the safe use of AI. Another important factor is explainability, because right now we don't really have a good idea of how AI actually work. We know it works very well. We don't know why.
Uh-huh.
So can we get AI to explain the decisions that they're making? That would help us build trust between AI and human.
Mm-hmm.
That would also help us understand when things go wrong, how do we fix it?
Okay. And that gets to, I think, something that is deeply visceral and very human, which is fear. So there are people who are very apprehensive and even scared about what it is AI means for our future. How rational is that fear, Ning?
I share that fear. I think treading into the unknown would bring fear. That's natural. It's important that we take this fear as a reminder for all the technologies that we develop. We need to make sure that it's robust enough, it's reliable enough, such that we can rely on this technology for our lives.
Mm-hmm. So for your research, what is it that comes next, and what's next for deepfake?
For my own research, my current goal is to make sure that we address all the system challenges in bringing this technology to everybody. I think it's a useful tool that would make a difference for the society. I would like to see that happen. So that's my short-term goal. In terms of long-term goal, I want to make sure that AI and human can live happily together.
Mm-hmm.
That means learning how AI makes decisions. That means working with AI to make sure that AI doesn't harm us, and possibly we don't harm AI. Right? I think the harmony between human and AI is what I want to accomplish probably 20 years, 30 years in the future.
Yeah. And just to wrap here, you talked about your daughter. I don't know what it is that sparked your interest in doing this kind of work, but was there something that you experienced or saw in your childhood that has brought you to this place of doing the kind of research that you're doing now?
It's an interesting story. So when I was very young, my uncle was one of the early adopters of computers. And he brought home a computer that I actually play video games on. And I wasn't very good at it. So I started looking into how to modify the system so that I can win the game all the time.
Okay.
So as I get very good at modifying computers, I ask myself, what can I do with it? And then as I, grow older and start working in DC, I start developing that sense of responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like if I know how to do this well, I should use my skill to do good things for humanity.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I'm at WashU.
This episode was produced and engineered by Aula Kuziz.
Podcast design by Aaron Dorr.
Our executive producer is Alex Hoyer.
St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio. Understanding starts here.
Do you find yourself regularly listening to episodes of St. Louis on the Air? Suggest us to a friend you think might enjoy our conversations. And leave us a review and rating on Apple Podcasts on the App Store. It's the simplest way to help people discover our show. Thank you.
St. Louis Public Radio is a member-supported service of the University of Missouri, St. Louis.
The Gateway brings you the day's news each weekday from around the St. Louis region and the state capitals in Jefferson City.
Our schools are accredited. We don't need this bill.
And Springfield.
How many more years must pass before lawmakers see time is of the essence?
I'm Abby Larico. Join me each weekday for The Gateway on the STLPR app or wherever you get podcasts.